Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
The man known to history as Emperor Nerva was born Marcus Cocceius Nerva, most likely on the 8th of November in the year 30 AD, though sources suggest that the year of his birth was 35 AD. This is just the first of many details about Nerva's life for which we have either a lack of or conflicting evidence. While the year of his birth is debatable, we do know for certain that he was born in the village of Narni in the Umbria region of central Italy to the north of the city of Rome. Nerva was named after his father, a prominent political figure within the early Roman Empire, one who was a member of the Roman Senate, the foremost political body of the state, and who served as consul, the highest office within the Roman government next only to that of the emperor, in 40 AD when Nerva was still a child. The wider family, the gens Cocceii, were a plebeian family, meaning that centuries earlier they had been amongst the lower classes of the Roman Republic. However, many plebeian families had acquired immense wealth and prestige during the 2nd and 1st centuries BC as the expansion of the Roman state created opportunities for upward social mobility. The Cocceii had been amongst those who benefited, and in the middle of the 1st century BC, the dying days of the Roman Republic, Nerva's great-grandfather had emerged as a rising political figure, gaining a place in the Senate and serving as governor of the province of Asia, one of the wealthiest provinces of the empire in the mid-30s BC. Hence, by the time Nerva was born, the family had been a well-established political family for nearly a century. Nerva's mother was Sergia Plautilla, a woman who hailed from the gens Sergia, an old patrician family that had formed part of the Roman aristocracy in the early days of the Roman Republic. Indeed, the family claimed to be descended from Sergestus, an exile from the fabled Trojan War who had allegedly settled in Italy years after the conflict. This was a period in which the Romans were playing up their ties to the ancient Trojans, most notably through the poet Virgil's epic prose poem, The Aeneid, a work which claimed that the Romans were descended ultimately from Prince Aeneas of Troy. Plautilla and Nerva's father had at least one other child, a daughter named Cocceia. Nerva was born during a period when the instability that characterized the leadership of the Roman Empire for so much of its history, and which would pave the way for Nerva to become emperor one day himself, was becoming apparent. The first Roman emperor, Caesar Augustus, who established the idea of the principate, that one man had primacy above all others within the Roman state, had reigned for 4 decades between 27 BC and 14 AD. His had been a highly successful reign, and there is every indication that he was immensely popular amongst the Roman people, not least because he brought peace after decades of civil war which had destroyed the Roman Republic. This was not the case with his successors, though. When Nerva was born, Augustus's stepson, Tiberius, had been emperor for many years. He was an unpopular ruler who spent much time absent from Rome at his villa on the island of Capri, where it was said he lived a life of debauchery. Several years later, Tiberius was succeeded by the young Caligula, popularly regarded as a deranged individual who, it was claimed, wished to make his favorite horse, Incitatus, a consul of Rome. Before he could do so, Caligula was killed in a palace coup in 41 AD to be succeeded by his paternal uncle, Claudius. Emperor Claudius brought sanity and stability back to affairs, but the dispatching of Caligula had set a precedent.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
Emperor did not have enough support either amongst the military or the Senate, and the people of Rome, he could be overthrown. Such a scenario was to bring Nerva to the imperial office himself one day. Nerva was the first of Rome's emperors for which there is a lack of source material with which to reconstruct his life and reign. This is in part because he became emperor at an advanced age and was never expected to rule the empire. As a result, little attention was paid to his early career in the first century, and later historians seem to have been unable to find out much about his earlier affairs. Also, for the first century and a quarter of the Roman Empire, from Caesar Augustus to Nerva's immediate predecessor Domitian, we have excellent histories written by the Roman historians Suetonius and Tacitus, two learned men who lived in the late 1st century AD and into the 2nd century, and were witnesses to many of the events and reigns they described. Both of them stopped at the end of the Flavian dynasty, and so did not cover Nerva's reign. Furthermore, while other historians later decided to pick up where Suetonius and Tacitus ended, in the case of two such works, the Res Gestae of Ammianus Marcellinus and the anonymously authored Historia Augusta, the sections dealing with the reign of Nerva have not survived down to the present day. Therefore, our best source for Nerva's reign is the Historia Romana, or Roman History, of Cassius Dio, a Greco-Roman historian who was writing over a century after Nerva's reign and who was far from a contemporary witness of the events he described. In terms of ancient historical writers, there are some other snippets on Nerva's reign to be found, such as a minor entry by the 4th century historian Aurelius Victor's De Caesaribus, a series of short entries on each Roman emperor over the space of 4 centuries. Contemporaries of Nerva also shed light on his reign, notably in the letters of Pliny the Younger, a governor of the province of Bithynia, and Pontus during the reign of Nerva's successor, Trajan, and the satirical verses of the poet Juvenal. With these, we can reconstruct some elements of Nerva's life and brief reign, though, as will become clear, many things about him are and will inevitably remain uncertain. While Nerva's life and career become more transparent over time, beyond the details of his family background, his early life is a black hole. He would have received the advanced education of a senator's son in Rome and on the family's estates in the Italian countryside, learning about Rome's history and rise to power, as well as the arts of rhetoric and oratory. The better to deliver speeches in the Senate himself one day, should he succeed his father there. While he may well have been exposed to the Stoic school of philosophy, which had become so popular amongst the Roman elite by the middle of the 1st century AD. It seems reasonable to assume he was a traditionalist and someone of a modest disposition, as he was described by Aurelius Victor as, quote, quite wise and moderate, and allegedly refused when he became emperor to have any elaborate statues of gold or silver erected in his likeness. Beyond these suppositions, his early life, actions, and character remain a mystery. We begin to stand on slightly firmer ground once we reach the 60s AD. By then, Nero had become emperor, perhaps having conspired to have his father-in-law, Claudius, poisoned with the help of his mother in 54 AD. We don't hear much about Nerva for the first half of young Nero's reign, though this is not surprising in some respects, as he was still a relatively young man. He finally emerges from the shadows in 65 AD when he was elected to the office of praetor. The praetors were important officials who had been elected in Rome for centuries. Some fulfilled military duties, while others were charged with managing the civil administration of the city, often overseeing the courts or public works. It seems Nerva was involved in the latter, as there is no record at all of him engaging in any major military command during his lifetime. A stray reference by the satirist and poet Martial, who was an exact contemporary of Nerva's, refers to him as the Tibullus of his age. This was an allusion to a very well-respected poet who had flourished in the early days of the empire under Augustus, and Martial's description of Nerva in this way suggests that the future emperor was possessed of some considerable literary ability. Nerva's election as one of the praetors of Rome in the year 65 corresponds with his involvement in the uncovering and foiling of the Pisonian conspiracy. Although Nero's reign had started well and he had been viewed as a promising ruler for several years, he is understood to have become more autocratic over time. The Great Fire of Rome in 64 AD was a turning point, with Nero's decision to requisition large swathes of land in the center of the city in the aftermath of the fire in order to build himself a grand palace, generating hostility amongst both the common people and the political classes. The following year, a conspiracy was initiated by a leading Roman politician, Gaius Calpurnius Piso. He recruited many members of the Senate and elements amongst the Praetorian Guard. We get an idea of how extensive the plot was by the fact that details of it first reached the government after details of it were leaked to someone at Misenum, a port to the south of Rome towards modern-day Naples, known then as Neapolis. This suggests that a wide network of people throughout Italy were involved. The plan was to kill Nero and for Piso to become emperor instead. In the event, the government was ahead of Piso, and the plot was foiled before it was ever put into action. Many of the conspirators were arrested and others were ordered to commit suicide. Although the details are unclear, Nerva was central to uncovering and foiling the Pisonian conspiracy, and in the aftermath of it, he was much lauded and a statue of him was set up in the imperial palace to honour his service. The Pisonian conspiracy was simply the prelude to a more significant revolt against Nero. The following year, a revolt broke out in the east of the empire in Judea, where the Jewish population were angered by decades of their religion being disrespected by successive emperors and governors of their province, as well as the desecration of the sacred temple of Jerusalem by the Romans. The first Jewish revolt acted as a catalyst for discontent at Nero's rule to emerge elsewhere. And in the year 68 AD, simultaneous revolts broke out amongst the governors of the provinces in Gaul and Hispania. One of these, Servius Sulpicius Galba, eventually marched on Rome and was declared as emperor. When it became clear to Nero that neither the Praetorian Guard nor the Senate were willing to support him, he fled from Rome and committed suicide. Galba was in turn overthrown in a palace coup in January 69 AD, following which Marcus Salvius Otto, a former governor of the province of Lusitania around modern-day Portugal, was proclaimed as the new emperor by the Praetorian Guard. This was something of a boon to Nerva, as Otto was none other than Nerva's sister Coceia's brother-in-law, Coceia having married Otto's brother some years earlier. While Nerva's relationship with Otto should have seen him welcome his sister's brother-in-law's ascent as emperor, Otto's reign would prove as short-lived as Galba's had been. No sooner had he claimed the imperial office than news arrived in Rome that a senior military commander at the northern border along the River Rhine in Germania named Vitellius had been proclaimed as emperor by his legions. He marched south and in April 69 became the third man to hold the title of Roman emperor that year after defeating Otto at the Battle of Bedriacum, with Otto committing suicide in the aftermath of his defeat. There was no honeymoon period for Vitellius either. Yet another military commander, Titus Flavius Vespasian, soon emerged as a rival far to the east. Vespasian was in charge of suppressing a major revolt of the Jewish people in Judea at the time and soon had gained the support of the legions across the eastern Mediterranean. In the autumn, forces loyal to him began to descend on Italy, and early that winter, Vespasian's faction defeated Vitellius's, ensuring that Vespasian became the fourth and final emperor of the year 69 AD. There would be no further rival, and a new dynasty was formed, the Flavian dynasty, one which would rule Rome for over a quarter of a century. As with Otto's accession at the start of the year, Vespasian's claiming of the imperial title at the end of the year of the four emperors benefited Nerva. The exact relationship between Nerva and the Flavians remains, as so much else of Nerva's early life, something of a mystery. But there was clearly a relationship of a considerable kind, and while Vespasian was away in the east, Nerva had played a part in looking after his young son, a boy by the name of Domitian, who had been left behind in Rome while Vespasian and his eldest son Titus oversaw the suppression of the Jewish revolt. He continued to do so for months after Vespasian became emperor, as he was still in the eastern Mediterranean. Vespasian rewarded him appropriately. In 71 AD, Nerva was appointed as one of the consuls for that year. Two consuls served each year, and they were the single most important magistrates in the Roman state, the equivalent of prime ministers back in the days of the Republic. Although the power of the consuls was greatly reduced once the empire came into being, the title still carried great prestige, and for Nerva to be appointed to the office so early in Vespasian's reign points to his close connections to the Flavians. He clearly continued to be held in high regard as Vespasian reigned, though, again, the details of his activities at this time are frustratingly limited. One thing which seems evident is that he had now conclusively determined not to take a wife. It seems certain that Nerva never married, nor did he have any children. Vespasian died in the year 79 AD, by which time Nerva was either in his mid-40s or almost 50, depending on the year of his birth. He was succeeded by his eldest son, Titus, the first time in Roman imperial history that an emperor was succeeded by his biological son. By all accounts, Titus was extremely well-liked, which ensured that his death, just 2 years into his reign, was all the more lamented. Having only had daughters, Titus did not have a son to succeed him, and so his younger brother Domitian now became the third emperor of the Flavian dynasty in a swift turnover of rulers. Some suspected at the time that Titus's rather sudden and somewhat unexplained death in his early 40s was suspicious, and queried if foul play by Domitian had led to him assuming the imperial title in 81 AD. His accession certainly did not damage Nerva's career prospects. In fact, if Suetonius's biographical history of Domitian's life and reign is to be believed, there is a possibility that Nerva had engaged in sexual relations with the new emperor many years earlier. It must be said, though, that Suetonius, while a tremendously useful historian and source for early imperial history, was also prone to injecting scandalous anecdotes and gossip into his work and was trying to suggest that Domitian was possessed of poor morals by inferring he had prostituted himself in some way as a young man. Whether Suetonius's statement can be read literally in any way may be unclear, but there is no doubt that Nerva continued to find some favour with Domitian as emperor in the 80s. It was a peculiar reign, one which mimicked that of Nero 3 decades earlier to a great extent. Domitian was well-liked to begin with and had some promising years as emperor. Then it all started to go wrong. His great sin was in failing to maintain the support of a majority of the key constituencies, which any Roman emperor needed to be able to rule effectively and to preserve his position. These were the Senate, the Praetorian Guard, the staff of the imperial household, and the people of Rome. Gradually, Domitian alienated all of these groups. The most egregious failure was in his disrespecting the Senate, its ancient traditions, and its sense of the majesty of its members. One wonders what Nerva, himself the leading figure of an established and esteemed senatorial family, must have made of this. What it all amounted to was a growing discontent with Domitian's reign by the end of the 80s, much as Nero's rule had run into trouble in the mid-60s AD. A conspiracy, much like the Pisonian conspiracy, was soon being hatched, and incredibly, in a déjà vu-like occurrence, Nerva was once again central to foiling it, just as he had helped to scupper Piso's plan back in 65 AD. This time, the conspiracy was hatched by Lucius Antonius Saturninus. Saturninus was a Roman senator and a military commander, one who had been appointed as a governor of a string of provinces under Vespasian, Titus, and Domitian. The last of these was an appointment as governor of Germania Superior, a frontier province in Germania where numerous legions were stationed to protect the empire's northern border, the most militarized part of the entire Roman Empire. In January 89 AD, Saturninus launched a revolt here, expecting that he would be able to gather the support of several Roman legions and having also organized an alliance with the Chatti, a Germanic tribe that lived just beyond the border. It all quickly went wrong, with the Chatti being prevented from crossing the River Rhine when an unseasonably warm winter melted the river early, while Acting on intelligence of the revolt, some other Roman commanders crushed the revolt. Saturninus was executed. What role Nerva played in this is unclear, but he was evidently involved in suppressing the revolt in some fashion, as in the year 90 AD, he was one of 13 individuals Domitian rewarded for their loyalty and their actions in suppressing Saturninus's rebellion by appointing all of them as extraordinary consuls for that year. Nerva's apparent role in uncovering and foiling the conspiracy of Saturninus and the revolt of the Chatti is interesting. This was the second time Nerva had apparently been central to revealing a plot against an emperor, having done so previously with the Pisonian conspiracy against Nero a quarter of a century earlier. What's doubly unusual about this is that he emerged on these two occasions, in the mid-60s AD and at the end of the 80s AD, from comparative obscurity, and then fades back into the shadows again for the most part straight afterwards the consulship accepted. This peculiar situation led to one theory being put forward several years ago that Nerva was actually some sort of intelligence officer, a spymaster of a kind employed by Nero and later the Flavians to keep the emperor and the imperial family safe by finding out if anyone was plotting against the ruling emperor. It was this clandestine position, so the theory went, which also allowed him to build up sufficient power in political circles to be able to become emperor later in his life. It is an entirely speculative theory, without a shred of written evidence to directly support it. Nevertheless, it does emphasize the very strange manner in which Nerva rose to prominence in the empire without leaving behind much record of his long career. Whether there is any truth to the theory, what is more than clear is that Nerva must have played some greater role in Rome's politics in the decades between the reigns of Nero and that of Domitian than the surviving evidence tells us. Views of Domitian did not change in the aftermath of the revolt of Saturninus, and the emperor does not appear to have made any effort to change course in terms of his ruling style. Instead, he spent the next few years in a paranoid state purging the Senate of members that he considered to be potential threats or men that were opposed to his rule. This approach didn't end well for the emperor. On the 18th of September 96 AD, Domitian was in his apartments in the imperial palace when the doors were locked to prevent him from escaping and some of his closest staff stabbed him to death. It is evident that this was a wide-ranging conspiracy which involved some of Domitian's staff who had become fearful for their own lives, along with elements within the powerful Praetorian Guard and the Senate. The complicity of influential senators is apparent in that Domitian's blood had barely settled when the Senate had convened and began deliberating on who should succeed the emperor. The Fastia Ostiensis, a public inscription listing the dates of the appointment of different officials and emperors in Rome between 49 BC and 175 AD, set up in the port of Ostia near Rome, tells us this meeting occurred the same day that Domitian was assassinated. In an extraordinary convocation, the first of its kind in Roman imperial history, the Senate effectively elected an emperor for the very first time. The man they chose to succeed Domitian was none other than Marcus Coccius Nerva. It is hardly surprising to learn that historians of the Roman Empire have long queried whether Nerva played an active part in the conspiracy which led to Domitian's assassination, given that he was elected as his successor just hours later. Still, despite the issue being long debated, no conclusive answer has been found. The fragmentary source material simply does not allow for more than speculation, and by its very nature, a conspiracy to murder an emperor tends to be secretive. Moreover, the two best sources for Domitian's assassination, Suetonius and Cassius Dio, openly admit that the identity of the conspirators was a matter of hearsay. On the other side of things, we know that Nerva pardoned many of Domitian's former allies and did not exact revenge against the Flavian faction after he became emperor for the perceived abuses of Domitian's reign. Given all of this, most historians have concluded that Nerva was perhaps aware of the conspiracy, but was not a leader of it. Instead, he was chosen by the Senate to become emperor because he was a consensus candidate, a respected, uncontroversial figure, one who had the support of a lot of the traditionalists within the Senate, but who had also been an ally of the Flavians and so was able to reconcile any factions which might emerge once Domitian was assassinated and so prevent a civil war of the kind which had occurred back in 69 AD, the year of the four emperors. As they met to appoint a successor to Domitian, the senators would also have been aware that Nerva was an elderly man and childless. He was a good candidate to serve as an interim emperor while a more long-lasting solution was found, though it was assumed that he would not rule for long, being 66 years of age already, if Cassius Dio was correct in suggesting his year of birth was 30 AD. Nerva's first acts were to overhaul the government and reform both the courts and the civil administration in the aftermath of the supposed years of tyranny under Domitian. Treason trials, for instance, were abolished, and many people whose cases were pending before the courts for some alleged crime against Domitian and his government were quickly pardoned and allowed to return to normal life. There were no such things as large prisons in Roman times. The punishments which one might suffer instead centered on being enslaved, being crucified, or forced to commit suicide, being press-ganged into the military or the navy, or being exiled. Death or exile to beyond the borders of the empire was the typical punishment for political crimes, and while Nerva couldn't bring people back from the dead, he did recall many people who had been exiled by Domitian back to Rome. More controversially was his approach towards close supporters and confidants of Domitian. He did not exact revenge against the former emperor's faction, though he did issue a decree of damnatio memoria. This was a Roman process whereby the memory of a deceased individual was condemned and steps were taken to destroy all records of their ever having existed. In this case, by removing Domitian's name from public places around Rome, having statues of him defaced, and generally tearing down the public monuments erected in Domitian's honour. The cornerstone of Nerva's reign was the re-establishment of harmonious relations between the imperial household and the Roman Senate. Nerva had been around a long time when he became emperor. He had seen both in the mid-60s AD and again 30 years later with Domitian that both emperors had brought about their own downfalls by losing the support of both the Senate and the Roman military. As we will see, Nerva never obtained the support of the army to any extent, but he didn't need it so long as he had the Senate as an ally. And he did win the support of the Senate. He showed it the proper deference which was expected under the Augustan system, and he made it clear that the cursus honorum, the system whereby senators would be promoted through different offices to become senior magistrates, would be brought back to its traditional way of functioning. Most importantly, he made it clear that differences of opinion would be respected, and he took an oath on becoming emperor that he would not order the execution of senators arbitrarily for simply speaking against his policies and conduct. In a direct refutation of Domitian's later years, he turned to the Senate for advice on policy matters. He even agreed to make Verginius Rufus the consul for a year, despite Rufus's allegedly having been a potential rival to succeed Domitian as emperor. All of this was effective. Nerva famously quipped that if he retired to become a private citizen, no man in the Senate would seek retribution against him for anything he had done while emperor. This changed relationship with the Senate is indicative of one of the major factors involved in Nerva's ascent as emperor. There were two kinds of emperor that might rule. The empire had been forged in 27 BC by Caesar Augustus through constitutional changes in which he asserted his position as princeps. At least at first, this did not involve him establishing himself as an autocratic ruler. Instead, it was meant to be a statement about his position as the first citizen of Rome, a man who stood above others, yet who would rule with the established aristocracy and political classes. This was the concept of principatus, that Augustus was the first citizen, but not a tyrant. The other kind of emperor was what Augustus and his successors actually quickly evolved into, imperators, who exercised imperium, whereby they were all-powerful rulers, which the Romans would previously have considered to be a sort of oriental despot, like the kings of Persia and Parthia far to the east. By the time of the Flavians, it had become all too common for emperors to rule through autocratic imperium rather than through more conciliatory principatus. It was Nerva's achievement to rebalance this political equilibrium, assuring the Roman aristocracy and political classes that he was returning to the original concept of being a first citizen rather than an all-powerful emperor. Those who followed him in the imperial office during the 2nd century AD would adhere to this concept to a greater extent than Nerva's predecessors, leading to more pronounced political stability in Rome for decades to come. Despite his conciliatory approach to being emperor and the fact that he was effectively elected to the office following Domitian's assassination, Nerva had no shortage of political opponents. Some of these were found within the Senate, hardliners who believed that Nerva should have gone much further in attacking the people who had enabled Domitian as his reign descended into tyranny. The primary constituency that were opposed to Nerva, however, was the military. Nerva, as we have seen, had virtually no military experience or background of any kind. This was a peculiar situation amongst a people whose history was so intimately connected with military prowess and conquest. Even a disliked emperor like Tiberius had been active as a military commander on several fronts in Germania and the Western Balkans in his younger years before becoming emperor. Nerva was instead perceived as an old, weak, and pacifist bureaucrat by the legions. It was an issue which would bedevil his reign and may explain his decision to appoint Verginius Rufus as the senior consul in 97 AD, a highly respected veteran military commander who some of the legions had tried to encourage to claim the imperial title back in 68 AD, at the beginning of the civil war following Nero's downfall, while he had also held major military commands in Germania over the years. Though Rufus was also elderly, Nerva was hoping to win over sections of the army by associating his reign with Rufus's stellar military record. To compound his problems, the Roman treasury was in the midst of a crisis when Nerva became emperor. There had been several costly wars during Domitian's reign, notably extensive campaigns in Britain and against the Dacians in the Balkans, all of which had produced few tangible results but had been a costly expense. The size of the standing army had also continued to grow for decades without complementary fiscal reform to help pay for the enlarged establishment. Finally, there was a growing inequality in Rome and Italy itself, and a crisis of poverty amongst the lower classes. As a bureaucratic ruler, Nerva sought to tackle these issues, imposing new taxes on the wealthy elite to establish a welfare system known as the Alimenta, which channeled money to orphans and the landless. There had been welfare measures in Rome for centuries in the shape of the grain dole, but Nerva expanded the system to alleviate the grinding poverty which so many Romans lived in despite the wider state's wealth and power. These measures did nothing to alleviate the financial pressure on the state. However, Nerva managed to pay for his new measures by ordering the tearing down of statues in Domitian's honor and having the gold and silver on them melted down to mint new coins, something which created a one-off financial windfall that helped pay for his welfare measures. One very notable element of Nerva's financial and administrative reforms concerns the Jewish subjects of the empire. As we have seen, a major revolt had been initiated by the Jews of Judea all the way back in 66 AD. That same revolt had dragged on for the better part of a decade, the last embers of it only being snuffed out in 73 and 74 AD. Thereafter, the Flavians imposed a tax of 2 drachmas per head annually to be imposed on every Jewish person of the empire, man, woman, or child. The Fiscus Judaicus, or Jewish tax, was an onerous imposition which was levied on the basis that it was to be used to pay for the cost of suppressing the revolt. It was still being imposed a quarter of a century later. Nerva was the only emperor of the era who attempted to reverse the anti-Semitic policies of the Romans by ending the tax. Coins minted during his reign, presumably in Judea and other eastern provinces where the Jews lived in large numbers, acknowledged Nerva as abolishing what was termed the, quote, malicious prosecution of the Jewish tax. This approach was quickly reversed, and Nerva's successor, Trajan, would reimpose the Fiscus Judaicus. It is notable that Nerva tried to intervene concerning what he deemed to be an unjust policy. He was right to do so on a practical level too. With the Fiscus Judaicus reimposed by Trajan, 2 further massive Jewish rebellions would follow. There were other measures enacted by Nerva that steered more towards social reform. From Cassius Dio, we learn that he promulgated a law that prohibited any man from being made a eunuch. A eunuch in ancient times was an individual who was castrated. In some Oriental courts, such as those of the rulers of the Persian Empire between the 6th and 4th centuries BC, eunuchs became prominent as officials who were charged with managing the king's harem. Over time, they gained in influence within government, and eunuchs remained a powerful group of individuals at the courts of many eastern rulers over the centuries, as late as the early 20th century in the case of the Ottoman Empire. The Romans generally looked down on the practice and equated it with the Oriental culture of their great eastern enemy, the Parthians. There were, nevertheless, a growing number of eunuchs in the Roman Empire by the late 1st century, many being slaves exploited for sexual purposes, others being religious figures. Nerva was clearly unhappy at the development, and attempting to prohibit it was one of his pieces of social reform. Other Nervan legislation banned men from marrying their nieces, a measure which reversed a decree that had been passed back in 49 AD to allow the Emperor Claudius to marry Agrippina, the daughter of his deceased brother Germanicus. There is the sense here of a ruler determined to reimpose traditional Roman values in a society which he perceived to be in moral decline. Presumably, Nerva's efforts to prohibit the proliferation of eunuchs and uncles marrying their nieces would have had little impact on the lives of many Romans. The lives of the Eternal City's inhabitants would have been much more impacted on by his decision to complete a building project which Domitian had started. This was a grand new imperial forum in the city centre. Over a century earlier, Julius Caesar had laid out the first Roman forum, a large public space of temples, markets, civic buildings, monuments, and colonnaded walkways, effectively a grand open area which was both a civic amenity and also a piece of propaganda designed to promote the reputation of the builder. Augustus had imitated him, and Vespasian had also built a very small forum during his reign. Domitian had ordered construction of one early in his reign, and now Nerva completed and opened it in 97 AD. The Forum of Nerva is the smallest of the imperial fora in central Rome. Perhaps the most impressive building when it stood in all its grandeur was a temple of Minerva, which dominated the western end of the forum. This was in honor of the goddess of wisdom, music, and poetry, who was the direct Roman equivalent of Athena, for whom the Parthenon was built on the Acropolis of Athens half a millennium earlier. Elsewhere, there was a temple to the god Janus, a deity who had an especial significance in Rome, as the doors of a much older temple of Janus were symbolically opened and closed, depending on whether the Roman state was at war at a given time or not. The Forum of Nerva was not the only public works program that Nerva was responsible for furthering during his brief time as emperor. One of the great achievements of the Romans was the infrastructure that they developed across their empire, notably the roads and the aqueducts that supplied water to their cities and towns. To expand the system and make repairs, Nerva appointed a military engineer by the name of Sextus Iulius Frontinus, a veteran of the wars in Britain and a former consul, as curator aquarum, overseer of the aqueducts. Frontinus was an energetic officer who ordered the officials working under him to begin producing a series of maps of the aqueduct system across the empire and identifying areas where repairs needed to be made and efficiencies introduced. Frontinus would continue in the office beyond Nerva's reign. At the same time, he began work on a treatise entitled De Aqueducta, on aqueducts, which has survived down to the present day and acted as a model for municipal governments when it came to developing urban water supply systems as late as the 18th and 19th centuries. It would be remiss not to consider Nerva's foreign policy, as limited in scope as it was. He did not engage in any wars, which was hardly surprising, given that the emperor did not have any background as a military commander. He might have chosen to do so if he wished, as there were border issues when he assumed the imperial office, notably in the Balkans, where Domitian had been embroiled in several wars with the Dacians and whose kingdom would be conquered in the first years of the following reign. Equally, in Britain, he was at least partially responsible for cementing the policy of consolidating the Roman position around the River Humber. Early in Domitian's reign, a campaign had been undertaken well into Scotland against the Caledonians, and a new emperor could well have attempted to conquer the rest of Britain. Nerva didn't, and his successors would broadly follow his lead, building defensive walls across northern England and southern Scotland, rather than attempting to proceed into the economically and strategically valueless Scottish Highlands. There were stirrings elsewhere, with tribes such as the Suebi, Sarmatians and Quadi rumbling on around the border area in Germania and the land corridor that separated it and the River Danube. Trouble would begin to emerge here decades later, something which Nerva made some preparations for in ordering the strengthening of the Limes Germanicus, the name for the massive northern border which stretched from the North Sea along the River Rhine and through Central Europe to the Danube and the Balkans. The issue of the succession had emerged immediately once Nerva became emperor. Depending on whether Cassius Dio or Aurelius Victor's account is correct, Nerva was either 66 or 61 years of age when he was elected as emperor by the Senate in the early winter of 96 AD. Life expectancies were relatively high for the Roman elite in imperial times, once a person survived the hazards of infancy and childhood. It was not uncommon for a person of Nerva's social status to reach their late 60s or even live into their 70s. But people living beyond 75 years was rare. Hence, if Dio's account is correct, and most historians tend to trust him over Aurelius Victor, Nerva was not expected to live for many more years when he became emperor. Moreover, he was childless and would have to choose a successor. It was probable that Nerva's first choice was Marcus Cornelius Maternus, an experienced political figure who had served as consul on several occasions and was a member of the Senate and had governed numerous provinces since the short reign of Titus. At the time of Nerva's accession, he was the governor of the wealthy province of Syria and was stationed along the eastern border with a large army. His experience and his military record would have recommended Maternus to Nerva, and a contemporary of these events, Pliny the Younger, later wrote that a powerful eastern commander was initially being prepared by Nerva to succeed him, a reference almost certainly to Maternus. While Maternus might have been a judicious choice, he wasn't favoured by those that mattered, the heads of the Praetorian Guard and the other legion commanders along the northern frontier in Germania. More than any other political grouping in the history of Imperial Rome, it was the Praetorians and the commanders of the legions stationed along the rivers Rhine and Danube that decided who became emperor and who didn't. In this particular case, they seemed to favour a different candidate. His name was Marcus Ulpius Trajanus, a member of a well-regarded Roman family that had colonised part of Hispania 3 centuries earlier. All previous emperors had hailed from Italy. However, Trajan was a very well-liked military commander and at the time of Nerva's accession was one of the most senior army commanders on the Rhine border in Germania. Over time, it became apparent to many that Trajan was a more esteemed potential successor than Maternus. There is nothing to indicate that Nerva was opposed to Trajan's candidacy, simply that he was more inclined to pick Maternus. His hand was forced, though, in the course of 97 AD. Early that year, and just a few months into his reign, Nerva faced a quasi-revolt amongst the Praetorian Guards, the Imperial Bodyguards, who were the only force allowed in Rome and Italy, and which, as we have seen, had become a political force in their own right, murdering Caligula back in Nerva's childhood days and placing Claudius on the throne. Now, at the beginning of Nerva's reign, the prefect or commander of the guard, Caspirius Aelianus, refused to obey Nerva's orders and effectively laid siege to the imperial palace, demanding that Nerva take a more militant approach to prosecuting those who had been closest to Domitian. Nerva's regime was exposed as being weak through these actions, and in the end, he was forced to placate Aelianus and the Praetorians. He did so by prosecuting several of Domitian's former closest allies. He also determined on a new succession policy. In the summer of 97 AD, word arrived on the Rhine frontier to Trajan that Nerva had adopted him as his successor. With this, the military standoff in Rome ended and the succession issue was resolved. Historians have debated the nature of the regime thereafter. Some hold that Nerva remained in position as emperor, but there was now effectively a period of dual administration, with Trajan ruling in association with Nerva from Germania. Back in Rome, Nerva spent the next few months having some of Domitian's former officials and government figures hunted down and killed, despite the ambiguities involved, whereby some of those now murdered were individuals who had taken part in the conspiracy which led to Domitian's assassination. Otherwise, beyond overseeing the implementation of some of the existing policies and carrying out more formal duties, such as the opening of the Forum of Nerva, the emperor seems to have entered a semi-retirement after arranging for Trajan to succeed him. Cassius Dio presents this as the enlightened policy of a ruler who had settled on a successor of much ability and who now felt confident enough to ease his workload, sure that the state would be in capable hands going forward. Dio's account may be a bit fanciful. In reality, Nerva possibly lightened his workload owing to ill health. On the 1st of January 98 AD, he suffered a stroke from which he never really recovered. 4 weeks later, on the 27th of January, he died while convalescing at the Gardens of Sallust, a villa and gardens developed by an earlier Roman politician and historian in the northeast of the city. Aurelius Victor tells us that on the day that Nerva died, there was a solar eclipse. He was buried in the Mausoleum of Augustus, the early imperial tomb on the Campus Martius in the city centre. In keeping with a well-established tradition for Roman emperors, he was deified almost immediately afterwards. The Roman historian and senator Tacitus, one of the ancient world's great historians, was finishing his account of the life of his father-in-law, Gnaeus Julius Agricola, the former highly successful governor of Britain, right around the time of Nerva's death, and in that book described the emperor, who had reigned for less than a year and a half, in glowing terms as a ruler who, quote, blended things once irreconcilable, sovereignty and freedom. Nerva's death could well have ushered in a new civil war in the vein of that which was seen back in the year of the four emperors, though it didn't. News was quickly conveyed north to Trajan on the Rhine border in Germania. He seems to have been quietly confident that he wouldn't be challenged by any other rival, as he did not rush southwards to Rome to seize power as quickly as possible. Instead, he spent months progressing around the northern provinces, perhaps assuring the large number of legions here along the frontier that he would show them greater favour than the pacifist Nerva had, and that is exactly what happened. Having finally arrived in Rome and taken full charge of the government there in 99 AD, Trajan embarked on a series of wars in the Balkans and in the east against Rome's greatest enemy, the Parthian Empire, expanding the Roman Empire to its greatest extent by the end of his reign. He would be a different emperor to Nerva, one who stressed the concept of imperium rather than the more conciliatory principatus. Trajan's accession and the manner in which it had been arranged by Nerva to appoint someone to succeed him who was not a close family relative, but who was instead a capable politician and military commander, would be replicated to a substantial degree for decades to come. Trajan would never settle fully on a successor, but he did show favor to a great nephew by the name of Hadrian. The pair did not have an immensely warm relationship, yet the promotion of him to a position where he could one day succeed Trajan was wise. Hadrian turned out to be an immensely talented administrator, a ruler who secured the borders and engaged in wide-ranging judicial, administrative, and economic reforms. His successor, Antoninus Pius, and the emperor after that, Marcus Aurelius, were each successful in their own ways despite a brutal plague epidemic ravaging the empire in the middle of the 2nd century. Owing to all of this, the period between Nerva's accession in 96 AD and the end of Marcus Aurelius's reign over 80 years later has become known as the reigns of the five good emperors. Beyond perhaps the long reign of Augustus, it was the most successful and prosperous period in the history of the Roman Empire. In laying the groundwork for it during his brief reign, Nerva secured for himself a reputation as one of Rome's better emperors, despite the brevity of his rule and the opposition he provoked within the Roman military. Ultimately, Nerva was one of Rome's most peculiar emperors. Of the rulers of the empire, between the creation of the Principate by Caesar Augustus and the end of the Severan dynasty and the onset of the 3rd century crisis in 235 AD, a period of nearly three centuries, he is the emperor about whom we know the least. The details of his early life, both as a child and when in his 20s and early 30s, are almost entirely unknown, other than his family background. He only begins to emerge in the mid-60s AD, when he played a role in uncovering the Pisonian conspiracy. For the next three decades, we know he was there on the periphery of Rome's politics, always seemingly close to those in power, though why and what functions he performed is a mystery. Particularly so since he did not perform any of the traditional roles of a powerful Roman political figure, such as becoming a governor of a province or taking part in some military campaign. Despite all of this, when a combination of the imperial staff, the Senate, and the Praetorian Guard decided to dispense with Domitian and the Flavian dynasty in 96 AD, it was an obscure senator that they elected to become the new ruler of Rome. His reign was short, though we shouldn't trivialize his achievements in combating the fiscal crisis, trying to adopt a more tolerant policy towards the empire's Jewish community, completing a new forum in Rome, and initiating a series of civil reforms. Barring the unlikely discovery of some long-lost source from the ancient world, we will never know the full contours of Nerva's life and reign, yet his time as emperor was an important watershed in the early history of the empire. What do you think of Emperor Nerva? Was he only ever intended to be an interim emperor while a more permanent successor to the Flavian dynasty was found? Please let us know in the comment section. And in the meantime, Thank you very much for watching.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.